everyone. My name is Jack Williams with S&K Sim, and welcome to another episode of the Knoll Sports Podcast. We are deep into the quote-unquote off-season right now, but there is really no off-season when it comes to college football or football just in general, as it's quite literally been, you know, I think we can call, you know, Tallahassee, we're celebrating 200 years this year. I think it's safe to say that you can possibly change the name of the city to Tallaloosa or Tuscalassee or something like that. And just talking about the amount of Alabama transfers that have come into this program, you know, we're talking before that happened, there was all the news of Nick Saban retiring as it happened live on this podcast last week. And then there was all the rumors that Mike Norvell was going to take the job. And then there's a lot of drama and the buildup to Norvell, you know, saying he's staying at FSU. And then there's the all the Alabama transfers coming in and out. And now we are here a week later with SM probably has the final count on the amount of Alabama transfers that have come into this program, but I mean, it's been a wild calendar week, honestly, since last week, since the last time we recorded this. Would you say so?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I was just watching two helicopters just fly by, but yeah, we're obviously recording this in the office as we do most weeks at Tallahassee Democrat office. No, it's crazy. Jack mentioned the craziness. Last week, in the middle of our podcast, 30 minutes in, the Nick Saban news broke. We had to pause. I had to get a story out because Pete Dammel mentioned that Mike Norvell was giving the short list. And we got a lot of pushback right away for that story on Facebook. Like, he's not going to leave. Why would he leave for that job? Blah, blah, blah. You know, and of course, right away we saw there was, you know, the interest from everything we've heard was reciprocated. Norvell had serious interest. And why wouldn't you? It's Alabama. Alabama has been the premier program in college football for the past, let's say, 2008, so 15, 20, 15, 16 years, 17 years since Nick Saban got there. It's been a premier program. It's been at the top of college football. It has crazy amount of resources, you know. And then before that, obviously, they had a few down years. They had Paul Bear Bryant there before, which, ironically, Norvell won that same day after we recorded the podcast, he won the Paul Bear Bryant Award.
All right.
So, you know, it's kind of just funny. Before we hopped on this podcast, we got delayed to starting a little bit because Trevor Jackson, a walk-on quarterback from Orlando, Jones High School in Orlando, committed to Florida State. So I guess this is just a breaking news podcast sometimes. we just get some stuff happening right before we come on or right where we're in the middle of everything.
But constant, yeah.
But as Jack, you know, kind of alluded to a little bit, there has been a total of 5 transfers from Alabama. They picked up 1 high school prospect. They have some interest in a couple others that have decommitted, including Jamie French, and then another one named Zion Grady, who's going to be both going to be on campus this week for Junior Day, which we'll talk about in a little bit. But yeah, no, it's
There's the you know, the flip to Florida State too from Javon Hilson as well.
Yeah, Javion Hilson.
Javion.
Yeah, uh-huh. Hilson flipped yesterday. Since Florida State, you know, Saban retired, Florida State has added. And we should caveat this: Sean Murphy's the only player that entered the portal after Saban retired that has come into Florida State. The other ones, like running back Rodell Williams, is someone who committed to Florida State, or was in the portal already. He was committed to Florida State after. Terrence Ferguson was the guy who people were like, oh my God, Mike Norvell just said he's staying when he committed because Norvell sent out a tweet. But as Matt Baker, me, and Jack, and several other journalists pointed out, that is just his normal thing to do. When there's a commitment, not necessarily didn't mean anything, you shouldn't read into that. Obviously, ended up staying, so it looks better. Malik Benson Jr. is a wide receiver, committed prior, and then you have,
I'm guessing he has at least 20 of those types of tweets sitting in his draft file happened, or he might just have a note app where he copy pastes it.
I'm not even sure if he's the one who tweets it out, you know.
That's true.
So, and then Earl Little Jr., a freshman, redshirt freshman defensive back of this past year, so that's 5 total players from Alabama, and then you count the flip, that's 6 players. You know, like, what was the names you said that was suggested?
What
name do you suggest for Tallahassee now?
Oh, you could call it Tuscalassee, or you can call it Tallaloosa.
Tallaloosa. Either way, hopefully that means national champions are not far behind, right?
Yeah, I mean, if you want to acquaint yourself with Tallaloosa or Tuscalassee or Tuscaloosa counterpart with all the Alabama transfers coming. That's the biggest thing you want to bring is national championship. So I still think this team has a lot of pieces it needs to put together before it gets there. But it's good that it's, you know, shopping in the portal and stuff like that. But I think one of the biggest things right now that will be a setback for them is the new sanctions that came up from the NCAA. I think it was on the same day or it might have been the same 48-hour period where
same 48-hour period.
I was at a basketball game and Essen finally got some downtime because was this your birthday too?
This is my birthday.
This was your birthday, and we were sitting here and I was in the basketball game and Essen already had to like jump off to do all the Norvell stuff, so it was like finally quiet part of the night, and we get the email about the NCAA sanctions, and I was at the game and I'm like, Essen, like, I can't do this right now. You have to grab it. He's like, are you kidding me? And I'm like, I know. It's something else with all the craziness and chaos that's happening today. But, and then it's been crazy. But Essen knows, you know, a little bit more about what the sanctions specifically are and what it's being handed down and what happened. I mean, you know, what's the biggest thing that came out of all of this, in your opinion?
Yeah, I'm set the scene. Like, you know, Jackson mentioned, and we'll talk about that. But, so I decided I want a pub sub for my birthday because I'm like, I can't go to a nice dinner today because this Norvell stuff has been all over the place. And, you know, it's kind of dampened what I can do for my birthday. It's fine. I'm not complaining. You know, it was still a good birthday overall. But so I went to get a pub sub. I got a call from talking to somebody from Alabama about some of the stuff that's going on. So just talking to someone about this. So I got the pub sub. I had to wait 15 minutes because they had to cook fresh tenders. Whatever, that's fine. You can't complain about fresh tenders on the sub, you know? Pub sub's the best. This is a advertisement for Publix, guys.
Oh, my God.
But, so I got in the car, talked to somebody for, like, 20 minutes. So my pub sub's sitting there. Get back in the house. I'm talking to, talking to a couple of people. While I'm on a phone call, I get a message from Jack. Like, this is going on. I'm like, well, shit, I gotta write this. So I start writing that. By the time I get to my pub sub, it's soggy because, you know, you got to load it up with good stuff. Got to get good mayonnaise and everything. So it was soggy. It was still really good because it's a pub sub, but, you know, I had it for lunch next day.
Come on.
But no, I mean, like, it was a really good sub, though, Jack. Come on.
All right.
But, yeah, no. So, you know. Sorry. Yeah, so where did it go? Yeah, so level 2 sanctions from NCAA for, and obviously the reports that we first got out, Sports Illustrated, Pat Forde, and Yahoo's Ross Dellinger had the first reports on this. They not instantly named someone. They updated stories later on. Alex, the assistant coach involved, was Alex Atkins, and the player was Armarius Mims from Georgia, who entered a portal, had an incident happened while he was I think one of his childhood friends died while he was on a visit here. Allegedly, Alex Atkins, I guess I don't know if you say allegedly at this point since it's like, you know, in the report.
Yeah.
But we'll stick with the allegedly.
Reportedly,
made impermissible recruiting activity and facilitated impermissible contact with the NIL booster, which was Rising Spear. They got sanctioned, and I think it's interesting that if you look at the timeline, spring 2022. It's around the time Rising Spear kind of took a step back at football, and we saw, the battles then come up and take a bigger, prominent role. So it was a sanction is basically, you know, Alex Atkins is suspended first 3 games of 2024 regular season, is given a 2-year show cause, which, you know, it's a blow. It sucks. We'll get to, like, you know, the ramifications in a second, but just talking about, like, you know, some other stuff. 2 years of probation for Florida State, scholarship reductions of five over the next 2 academic years, a reduction by 7 in official visits, a prohibition on recruiting communication for 6 weeks over the next 2 academic years, including this next week for Alex Atkins, a prohibition on communication with athletes in the transfer portal from April 15th to April 21st, a reduction of 18 evaluation days this spring, and a financial penalty of 1% of the athletics budget department. Which I guess we could talk about that in a little bit as well, that, you know, they operated at a loss this year. But that's besides the point for this right now. I think the biggest takeaway is obviously the scholarship reduction, which hurts. I think Florida State's around 89, 90 players by my count. Right now, they have to get down to a scholarship of 85 limit, and then and you know, you lose five over the next 2 years, I don't know how you break it down. So that's going to be interesting to see how they kind of navigate that. Obviously, losing Atkins for three games is a big deal. Right. That offensive line is returning a lot of talent. So that's a good thing, I guess you could say, is like, you know, you don't have to worry about it as much when you have a talented group coming back.
Not too huge of a drop-off, potentially.
Yeah, so it's, you know, I think another important thing to note in that is, like, you know, because this came out in the middle of Alabama's coaching search, was Mike Norvell was not implicated in this at all, has nothing to do with it. He's in the clear. Mm. FSU as a program was in the clear, did not do anything wrong. It was one coach, one thing. Allegedly, it sounds like Atkins was not upfront about it and 100% truthful in his first meeting with NCAA, which kind of brought down the Sanction 2 violations. And, it's in the past with Florida State, it sucks. It's, you know, what we'll get into is it's stupid. You know, the NCAA is very nitpicky going after Florida State for this particular incident when there's a lot of other stuff going on, including for the school that turned him in, that Florida State's one getting in trouble for this, is paying this, you know, because I can't remember who tweeted out, but said, you know, if we're going to, you know, put sanctions on violations on team about this, you might as well vacate the entire season because there's this kind of stuff going around everywhere. So it's kind of ridiculous. I don't know what your thoughts were, Jack, on this.
In my opinion, it's just the NCAA being the NCAA. This is an organization that causes grief for everybody and stuff like that. And I know the Florida State has had their run-ins with them this year and stuff like that. I do think it is kind of dumb that they're weighing in like this and stuff like that. I understand rules are rules, but I don't know. When it gets into all this legality stuff and stuff like that, sometimes it gets a little overcomplicated, and I think sometimes people want to do that to confuse other people. It is kind of dumb in my opinion. But, that's just, you know, that was one recipe in the pot this week of what was the chaos soup on the menu. But there's the sanctions. But then you got some kind of good news around the way as well. You know, Mike Norvell, they put out that, you know, Michael Alford put out that cryptic tweet with kind of the black smoke, which signifies that a new, in Catholicism, it signifies that a new pope has not been selected, meaning that FSU had not selected a head coach, or I don't know if it was supposed to be FSU had not selected a new head coach, or the new head coach wasn't leaving, or if it was that Alabama had not yet selected a new head coach. Either way, we got complete clarity, like 5-10 minutes later, and Norvell announced that he is staying with the program, which is news. I think a lot of FSU fans, I think a lot of them, you know, I think even us kind of had an idea that he was going to stay, but there was still kind of that feeling of there's a high possibility that he could not stay and leave as well. His name was in that mix a lot throughout the entire time when all the hiring stuff was going on, but it's a huge, it's a big keep for the program considering the season they had, the building he's done, the climb he's been on since he got here, since 2019. It's huge news that he, and then SM might have some more details on what the negotiations, or if there were any negotiations or talk between them looked like, but the fact that if there was talk that he chose to stay with this program is huge just in general.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think the biggest winner of last week was obviously FSU fans keeping one of the winners was FSU fans for keeping Mike Norvell. FSU beat writers because we went through a coaching search. But the biggest winner was Jimmy Sexton. If you guys don't know who Jimmy Sexton is, he's the agent for, was it Nick Saban, Dan Lanning, Steve Sarkisian at Texas, Kalen DeBoer, who eventually got hired to Alabama, and Mike Norvell.
Right.
So this man just had a great week of, you know, just he, you know, obviously Nick Saban retired. That was domino number one. Then you saw Dan Lanning was the number one, from everything I've heard, Dan Lanning was the number one choice at Alabama. Mm. Obviously, he decided to stay there. He has, you know, some nice incentives from Oregon. That sponsorship, the Nike, was a great thing for, you know, Oregon. They were able to come to a quick conclusion of he's staying. He tweeted out, I think, Thursday. So this happened, you know, Saban retired Wednesday. Thursday morning, Lanning had a thing out saying he was staying. So we went through an entire day Thursday. I think Sarkisian released something on Friday. He signed an extension, three-year, four-year extension with Texas the next day. That was announced right before the, you know, and then Mike Norvell got an extension out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, you know, so he, it sounds like Sexton got all his guys paid. Then he's like, okay, Alabama, here's your guy now.
Right.
So from my understand is that they were, negotiations with Norvell was going on simultaneously with, while DeBoer was going on as well. DeBoer was always seen as the plan B. They got him. They got what they wanted. And Nick Saban was, I'm not Nick Saban, sorry. Mike Norvell was kind of the backup, but he was, but there was high interest in him. They went hard after him. That like, so even if he was plan, you know, plan C, it was someone they had high interest in, someone they would really like to climb with, out of the Nick Saban era and into the future. But, yeah, so, you know, Mike Norvell, as we got a story up right away, was staying, and not long after, we got multiple tweets telling us, hey, look, this guy's actually got a 8-year extension. He's going to make in excess of $10 million a year. Mm-hmm. We haven't got contract details yet. I'm sure it's going to be coming soon, but I don't think fans care about, as much about the contract details as much as the fact that Norvell's staying.
Yeah, that's the fact that he's pretty much here. Yeah, exactly.
No, and then obviously since then they've added three players to their portal from the portal since. Have added a 2025 kid, are hosting Junior Day. There's a lot more clarity of what's going on at Florida State. Something, you know, Jack said, you know, he's not sure how close this team is. I will say, you know, he said there's still a few more pieces. I think I texted in a group chat with a couple other people that work at the Democrat. I think Florida State's a legitimate championship contender with the addition of Sean Murphy. The one position I think we agreed that lacked was linebacker. They fixed that. You know, I think we talked last week about, I had some doubts about running back. They since added Roydell Williams at running back. So a guy who has proven at college, still, I want to see more out of wide receiver. They might add somebody. We'll see what comes out of that. But the defensive backs group is really strong. They have some talent. The defense might be better than last year's, like talent-wise. We'll see what, you know, on paper it might be better. We'll have to see what it looks like when it comes to, like, actually playing. But the defense could be improved. Offense, you know, I don't think DJU is quite Jordan Travis.
Right.
But he's a very talented quarterback in his own right. The running back room, you know, once again, I don't think you have another Trey Benson on the team, but you have some pieces, and you don't have a Johnny Wilson. So the offense might take a step back, but the defense is going to be really good again next year.
I think it's going to be a similar thing to what we saw with the secondary and the defensive backs this season, is that we're going to see a lot of, I think, good play just as a unit together, rather than, I don't think there's going to be too many, you know, shining individual stars. I think there's going to be a lot of great team performance together and stuff like that. You know, the secondary had some good guys in it as well, but the big thing was that they just executed as a unit, whether that you could throw in a multitude of guys in and there wouldn't really be too much of a drop off. The defensive line performed so well. The edge, I mean, unfortunately, you're not going to replace Jared Verse. And then, you know, Patrick Payton had the season they did as well. I think they're going to be strong again at defensive end, but, I think there's going to be a little bit of a dip there, but not too much. I think the defense overall is going to be strong just as a collective. And I agree with what Essen said, too, and just that there will be some dips in offense and stuff like that. I mean, it's not, you know, a duo like Johnny Wilson, Keon Coleman doesn't come around a lot in programs and such. So, I mean, the wide receiver, I think, is going to need a little bit of a jump a bit, and we're going to have to see some guys, you know, take a jump up a little bit more as well. We've mentioned names about guys that have been in the system a little bit more, but a lot of them really haven't had breakout performances just yet. There's been some nice additions at running back, and I hope personally that we see just a little bit more development at that running back position depth-wise as well. It seemed like Trey Benson did everything last year for them. And granted, he's a player that is going to do as much as he can when he's out there as well. At the same time, just didn't seem like depth really spread. And, you know, we talk about the ACC championship game or a lot of Lawrence Toafiele kind of put that kind of load on top of him as well. And, you know, there wasn't really as much development as we wanted to see in the running back room. That's kind of the big thing as well. And then, you know, you talk about the linebackers. Well, you know, we got the addition from Alabama. There was the addition from Alabama. And, yes, DJ Lundy did come back. I still think this room is still pretty shallow, in my opinion, because
it's a football season. You don't know who's going to end up getting injured. You don't know what's going to happen. So if one of these guys falls off, are the guys behind him going to be ready to step up into this position? Because it's still an extremely young room. It could be a room that could be good probably in a year or two, depth-wise. But right now, in my opinion, still very shallow. I don't really like the narrative that everything's fixed because of these two additions. I still think that this room needs to go deeper. I think last year there's a little bit of luck on their side when you're keeping guys like Tatum Bethune and Kalen DeLoach and DJ Lundy, and you have all those guys there. Originally, yes, there were questions about how deep the room was going to be early on in the preseason, and the room kind of shut everyone up after that. But I think truly this is the year now where depth is going to be tested. So I think that room is still a bit more shallow. I think the rest of the defense still looks pretty consistent. It'll be interesting to see all of them kind of operate just on one, kind of operate together and stuff like that. I think the defense is looking pretty consistent so far, and the building blocks are being put in place when talking about next year.
No, I agree. I'd say the linebacker room is still, like, you know, needs some work, needs some players, but the ceiling has been raised so much with this addition of Sean Murphy, former, I think, 5-star player, really talented player. I think your ceiling has been raised, which is the important thing. You're not depending on Lundy being number one. And you have some young guys who could step up and become those better players as well. Like, you know, especially Blake Nicholson is a player, I think, who has a ton of potential. And, you know, next year, if he plays to his, you know, even to like 90% of his potential, you have two very solid ACC-level linebackers who can actually play in the SEC, as we've seen with, you know, Murphy. So I think they've raised the ceiling of that group. That's what I mean. They've raised the ceiling. I do think, like, you know, obviously, I still think depth, Florida State is further behind a Georgia. Obviously, not Alabama anymore because, you know,
Right. Their
entire team's in the portal, it seems like. But they don't have quite the depth of the transfer portal is the most depth of any team in the country.
Mm-hmm.
But, no, I think it's interesting. Florida State, obviously, we talk a lot about more next year. I think from what I've heard, I think it sounds like they start the tour of duty on Friday. Then they go into just starting doing like different things, building up for this coming season because, you know, the offseason, football never stops. Training never stops for football because it's a different game where you got to be on top of everything to be playing all the time.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And then obviously, as we know, recruiting never stops. Our job never stopped, which is fine. We need stuff to write about. We're not complaining about that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Just like, you know, a little breather sometimes would be nice.
Yeah, it would be nice to say the least,
But yeah, no, our editor, Jim Henry, had a story this morning about Florida State. So one thing that's interesting is, and I think it's going to be a discussion over the next few months, is Florida State operating expenses for 2023 in 20 sports was $172.1 million. And they had operating revenue of just under $170 million. So it comes out to about a $2.57 million deficit in 2023. That fiscal year runs from July 1st, 2022 to June 30th, 2023.
Mm-hmm.
So, and obviously, take that with a grain of salt, as like Alfred talked to Henry and mentioned, like, you know, it's a limited snapshot of revenues and expenses over that period. He said that FSU is financially stable and healthy, but they went from, I think, a pretty sizable, I can't remember how much it was, but surplus last year, $10.3 million surplus to $2.57 million deficit. It's just interesting to note because they just signed their head coach to an extension that's going to pay him $10 million, over $10 million per year annually. That's a $2 million increase on him. There's a sizable increase on facilities. There's construction going on the IPF, on the stadium, on different various projects, runs football and different things. I think you probably saw the tweet this morning about softball pulled out. They're adding more seats to the Plex. It's going to be exciting. Yeah. We can see that, you know, bit of it tomorrow. We'll get to softball in a little bit. They start the season, you know, it's crazy, in 2 weeks. Like, So there's some expenses going on. They gave extensions to all their coaches. So there's a lot going on. So it's going to be interesting to see how Florida State navigates and how their budget looks in 2024 because it can't be, you know, like, going from $10.3 million in surplus at, you know, operating a $2.5 million, $7 million deficit. Like, as Alfred said, it might give us the whole picture, but there is a lot going on over there. So I'm interested to see what this looks like in 2024 because, you know, Florida State, I don't know if you heard, Jack, they're suing the ACC to get out of the grant of rights. Have you heard about anything about that?
No, I have not. I have definitely not because I put my head in the sand every day. and right above the head in the sand is the rock I live under. So, no, I've not heard about that before.
Oh, cool. Thank you.
Oh, good Lord. Good Lord. I didn't think there was going to be so much legal jargon and legality involved in a sports writing job. But you know the world is magical, isn't it? To say yeah. the least. I mean, do you have anything else to add about operations and, you know, the fun world of FSU, the boring part of sports?
I think we could move on from that a little bit.
There's a busy weekend coming up here.
We got Junior Day on Saturday. Part of things, I think, is we see a lot of teams are having multiple junior days. Florida State's having one this year because of the sanctions.
Mm-hmm.
So that's going to pay, you know, it's not going to play a huge factor. I don't think it's going to kill them. But some, at least I'm getting this list from 247 of some of the players expected to be here. Four-star quarterback and FSU commit Trammell Jones. His teammate, five-star Jamie French. You got, I'm just going to do the notable names, the bigger names. Five-star edge Zion Grady, who was an Alabama commit, is now, you know, not committed anymore. Got five-star linebacker Zayden Walker, four-star linebacker Tavion Wallace, and, you know, a couple few four-star defensive backs, and a bunch of, like, you know, other talented players. You know, it doesn't really matter if they're three stars now because we've seen Luke Krummenhawk, you know, at one point was unranked and became like a top 20 player in the nation. So it doesn't really matter where you're ranked at this point as a junior because you have your entire senior season to put on tape. And like, I think one person that's a great example of that, DJ Lagway, is like 100 something, I think, and finishes number 4 overall players, Florida signee. So there's a lot of time to grow and, you know, go up and down for players. So it's not something you worry about right now.
Mm.
But there's a bunch of talent coming on campus, so I'll be out there for that. Jack would be able to handle a basketball game, so there's always something going on.
Yeah, there's always something going on in on the west side of town.
But yeah, no, so we'll keep an eye on, you know, two players I'm interested to talk about. It's obviously the two former Alabama commits, I mean, Jamie French and Zion Grady. They'll both be here this weekend. That's who I'm looking forward to talking to and just picking their brain and seeing where they stand at this point. Those are going to be interesting players to talk to and figure out where they are in their recruitments. From what I understand, is both players are going to go and make other visits now that they're uncommitted from Alabama. And it doesn't mean Alabama's out of it either. You know, how this op works, Landon Thomas being a perfect example of, you know, he was committed to Florida State, flipped to Georgia, flipped back to Florida State, eventually signed to Florida State, and he's on campus now as an early enrollee. So...
Mm-hmm.
Things can happen. It's a crazy, crazy world of
recruitment and such.
Recruitment.
Yeah, I mean, no, Jamie French, I mean, I've emphasized this to SM before, too. He made an appearance at Elite Day, Elite Camp this summer, and oh my God, he is just an impressive player to watch. And this was before his junior season. Just great hands, just fast. I mean, this would be a, like... I know we talk about the pickups of, you know, how big Charles Lester was and, you know, to pick up stuff from last class and Luke Krummenhawk and just all different names. But this kid's good. This kid's really, really good. And this would be, in my opinion, this would be a huge pickup for them as well. After I thought FSU was really in the mix, and he said before in past articles that he was interested in FSU. So in my opinion, I'm not an expert when it comes to whatever's going on in his head. I've only done reading and such. But, I mean, if he's talking this way about it, I'm guessing – I mean, we've read in the 247 story that his teammate is in his – Jones is in his ear constantly about getting to FSU and reuniting at FSU. It looks favorable right now, early on, I would say the least. But he has a lot of visits to make.
He has a decision. He has some decisions to make and stuff like that. There's also a lot of other programs in the country that are very attractive to go to as well. But it'll be interesting to see what happens with Jamie French and a lot of the other guys will be coming to junior camp. But we'll make a hard switch over here now to inside, and it's very nice to be inside today because it is in the low 40s here in Tallahassee. It was in the 20s this morning. Basketball. Both teams are red hot right now. Men's team's riding a 4-game winning streak. The women's team's riding a 3-game winning streak. The men have a, and we're gonna, you'll know the result of this game by the time this podcast comes out. But the men are playing Miami tonight in Coral Gables. This will be their biggest challenge of the year so far, or biggest challenge in the stretch, I should say, so far. You know, they've rattled off some really good wins in ACC play. You know, you got a wide win over Georgia Tech. That looks a lot better now considering Georgia Tech beat Clemson in double overtime last night. Really great game. Virginia Tech, that was, you know, that's another win. I think FSU didn't want it really to come down to the wire as FSU had a wider lead in that game and shrunk. Wake Forest, that was a huge win at the time, too. And it still is a huge win as well. It's only Wake Forest was a conference leader. I believe Wake Forest lost last night. Yes, in a pretty nasty game against NC State where some violations were handed out. And then Florida State won this past weekend at Notre Dame. Was able to hold on to kind of a 9-10-point lead throughout the entire game. Kind of cruise to that. Miami's coming up. And, I mean, this is a big big game for FSU coming up. This is a Miami team that knows how to play very well. I'm going to pull up my how to watch because I put some very interesting facts in there when I wrote that I cannot remember off the top of my head. So I'm going to fill up a little bit more space as I talk here. Here they are. So this is a team that makes a lot of shots. They're hitting 49% of their field goals on average, and they're hitting 57% from three. And when they're talking about field goal shooting, is threes in general, they're 40%, which is ranked fourth nationally. This is just a good shooting team. They're averaging 14.56 points per game on fast breaks, fifth lowest fouls in the country. This is just a team that's playing very sound basketball. I know how much people love to hear about how well Miami's doing. But FSU at the same time is playing very well too.
There's a life ball update to, you know, kind of try to fix that out.
But you know, FSU's playing very well as well. This is a team that kind of works by committee throughout entire games. Well, I believe they play about 10 to 12 players per game. A lot of these guys don't play more than 25 minutes. They're really spreading the wealth. The way this is working out is they're just exhausting out teams. When you're cycling this many guys through in and out the court, I mean, one, it looks like a hockey line change, but two, you're just gassing out your opponent. You're keeping everybody fresh and stuff like that, and it's worked so well for them, but we haven't really seen that just yet against, you know, one of the top teams in the country's less ACC. Yes, you can argue the Wake Forest win was kind of a prover in that, but we haven't seen them do it against someone who has been in the top 25 consistently so far these past few years or this year. You know, there's a lot of legacy teams in the ACC. Miami just coming off of their Final Four appearance. They also get to see Matthew Cleveland again. I know that's going to be – I know there's all different feelings going around for that. Matthew Cleveland, last time he played Miami, hit that dagger in that absolutely insane game that happened last year against the Hurricanes in Coral Gables. But, I mean, there's a lot of, you know, show-me moments coming up for FSU and showing how legitimate this run is through ACC play. You have Miami coming up. You have Clemson on the weekend. You have Syracuse on the road as well. Syracuse, usually all-strong program. And then kind of ending out this stretch here. They're hosting North Carolina on January 27th, North Carolina being number 4 in the country right now. This stretch is going to be critical for them, showing that, yes, we are a legitimate team. No, it's not because we're beating bad teams. We are full-out a legitimate, strong team. There's a lot of great guys that are producing on here, Jameer Watkins, Jalen Gainey. We're seeing just good productions from everyone. And tonight, Wednesday night, is going to be the first time that we are going to see this team really have a chance to say, we deserve to be, you know, in a conversation now and have people talking a little bit more about us. And Essen, I would say too, if they can roll off some wins here, maybe if they can continue winning for these next four straight, I wouldn't be surprised if there's some talk now in bracketology about this team potentially moving into a spot. The six losses don't look great right now, especially when you're counting Lipscomb, South Florida. SMU wasn't great either. Neither was Georgia. But when you see this team starting to roll off a few more ACC wins, you know we might see a little bit chattering, and you know we might see a little bit more of a presence coming up later on in the season. But talks may be starting if the FSU can continue to win, especially here in this stretch.
Yeah, I mean, it could be interesting. I think just pulling up the bracketology from ESPN.com and Joe Lunardi, Miami is a last four team in. So, I mean, I think Miami's a really good team, like as everything Jack alluded to. Like, you know, they're a really good team, but they have that huge blemish on their schedule. A 9-point loss at home to Louisville. Their only loss at home this year. They're 9-1 at home. They're a really talented team, obviously. Matthew Cleveland, you know, they have a lot of returners from last year. Jim Larranaga is a fantastic coach down there. But they are one of the last four teams, and they'd be the 12th seed according to Joe Lunardi's bracketology right now. So I'm not sure. I think the conversation is still premature to start talking about FSU, just because the early losses, especially the Winthrop and stuff like that, look really, 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 I cannot emphasize enough, really bad.
No, yeah. What would you agree to that if they win, you know, if they beat Miami, Clemson, Syracuse, and they beat North Carolina, would you agree that there would be conversation in 2 weeks after
all this? But we've seen that
since right now it's premature, but
yeah, I mean, even if they pull off four, I think you can start talking then, but I think it's still like the hole they dug is that deep that it would still be like, hey, cool, go do something in a tournament kind of thing, you know? Mm-hmm. So they have a lot more to prove. It's still a long road back for them because Miami, Clemson, Syracuse, and North Carolina, of those teams, yes, they would be nice wins, but, you know, two would be on the road. You still are only facing, you know, of those three games, two of those two on the road, none of those teams are ranked. Yes, UNC would probably, you know, start the conversation, but we've seen where a team gets a top 10, top 5 win, and they're still left out because of early season losses or, you know, just different things. So I think there's a lot of work left. I think it's they might get back to that, but I think, as Hamilton pointed out to you last time you talked to him, is like, you know, we're focused on the game Wednesday.
Yes. Focus on what you control and stuff like that. But one team that really doesn't have to argue really if it's going to be in the tournament or not is the women's team. They're more, again, still focused at one day at a time. But right now, this team, we're talking about the big picture. This is a team that is currently trying to battle for a hosting spot right now in the women's tournament. They are coming off of two really big wins over number 20 North Carolina and number 11 Virginia Tech. Just dominant performances all around. This is a team that has just been really strong, just collectively playing. They're just another team that's just collectively playing as a unit. But the big thing is that we've really seen Sarah Bajetti really just emerge as this just a huge contributor, just really take over a just dominant role with this team. You know, she threw down a career high, 32 points in the win over Virginia Tech. She was the difference maker in that win. We've seen a lot of Tania Latson also passed the 1,000 point mark as well. Her production has, you know, gone down a little bit just because they've been targeting her a little bit more in the paint and stuff like that. FSU isn't the tallest team in the world, so they've been targeting Latson a little bit more. It's been harder for her to get to net. But what that's really opened up is that's opened up the game for Bajetti to really start scoring. And just really, it seems like every game, and it'll be interesting to see what they do against Syracuse on Thursday, it seems like every game she's been able to just match her performance again and again. You know, she had in that loss to number 3 NC State, she had 12. And then the win against Clemson, she had 19. And then against North Carolina, she had 23. And then Virginia Tech, which has been one of the biggest games so far, debatably their biggest win of the season so far, she had 31 points. Impressively shooting 5 of 9 from 3. She was 8 of 12 from the free throw line and 9 of 15 from field goal. This is a team that looks well, just good in general. Mikaela Timpson, KK Timpson, someone who, again, just a defensive presence that has just had a huge breakout year as well. I believe she has 8 double-doubles this year. She picked up her 8th against UNC. She really took on a good scoring role that was needed against Virginia Tech with 18 points. She's in, I believe, in the top 50 in the nation right now in double-double leaders and rebound leaders and blocks as well. She's become just a great defensive piece for them this year so far. This team is, you know, just clicking on all ends right now. They look really good. Essen mentioned it a little bit in the press conference as well. Tanaya probably wants to get going just a little bit more. She did miss some free throws in the game as well, but just still a dominant all-around player. And this team is going to be challenged down the way as well. Syracuse is no slouch. This is a team, in my opinion, that could be, this will, if Syracuse wins against Florida State, this will allow Syracuse maybe to break out a little bit more as well. Syracuse is a team that is receiving votes. They're 14-2 on the year. It's just kind of the depth of schedule that's kind of kept them out as well. They have their only 2 losses this year to North Carolina and number 20 Maryland. That loss to Maryland was only by 2 points. North Carolina was a little bit more of a blowout. That's a 75-51 loss. As we know, North Carolina is ranked. At the time, they weren't. At the same time, Syracuse does have wins over Notre Dame, who was number 13 in the country at the time, Alabama, and Iowa State. Iowa State is also coming off of a larger win. Shouldn't say larger win, but a bigger win for their program over Baylor. And Syracuse is their own piece of their own, similar to Tania Latson. Daisha Fair, who's a guard, who is averaging 19.8 points per game. She is right in that same area that Latson is right now, and just averaging points per game right now nationally. She's another strong player as well. Again, kind of a, you know, when we're talking about height, kind of a smaller player. She is 5'5", but when you're scoring 19.8 points a game, I don't think it matters too much. But this is going to be another competitive game on Thursday, and then right after that, they get the opportunity to come back home and host Virginia. And this is just a team that's playing very well right now. They had this big challenge with the back-to-back ranked teams. They were able to pass that challenge as well. This is a team that continues to roll. They're looking really good, and they just have pieces that are just, you know, they're pieces right now that are playing well or continue to play well, like Latson, and Elmira Gordon is another player, Sarah Bajetti, Mikaela Timpson, and then you have to talk about the people behind them, Alexis Tucker, Maya Bonner. There's just a lot of pieces right now that are coming together for them, and this is just a fun team to watch. Altogether, it's just a good time. I know Essen is getting ready to work on a piece coming up here too on Elmira Gordon. Is that correct?
Yes. I'm going to talk to her Friday. Probably have that featured next week sometime. But, you know, just some facts. She's, you know, last year dealt a lot of injuries. She's finally feeling healthy. You know, think she was one of the most productive players in the ACC her freshman season. All ACC freshmen. In her sophomore season, she had a slew of injuries that kind of sent her to the bench. And now she's fully healthy. She missed postseason last year as well, along with Tanaya. But now she's back this year and has been starting along with, her and the 3-guarded attack with her and Sarah. And it's been a, you know, very talented team. It's fun to watch. She is a nice presence where, you know, she can hit a 3, she can hit up, get to the rim, and really take that pressure off of Tanaya and Sarah. And open up the game for more, you know, once you have more people that could drive, once you have more people that could open, you know, shoot, it opens up the floor more for KK in the middle. It opens up, you know, Snoop Turner just entered the starting lineup and has excelled in that role as well over there.
Oh, yeah.
She's another player who didn't play much last year, but has taken a larger role this year. Not going to be a scorer, not going to, you know, but she's that player that's going to do the dirty work, that's going to get, you know, the rebounds, offensive rebounds. She's going to hustle for the ball. She's going to get those fouls that, you know, hard fouls that you need. She's going to be there doing all the dirty work and make sure the team is able to do to function how it needs to function with her there. She's a very talented player. It's been fun to watch. Jack brought up the bracketology, so I have it pulled up right here. Right now, there would be a 4 seed that would host Stony Brook, Utah, and Drake, Utah being a 5 seed. Drake and Stony Brook being automatic qualifiers. If the postseason ended today, they would be playing the first and second round in Tallahassee before eventually making their way to Caitlin Clark and Iowa, which, you know, Caitlin Clark against Tyant Latson, I think I would pay a great amount of money to watch that. I don't know, but I know Jack is, you know, his sister went to Iowa.
He did.
Graduated from there, so Jack and his family have a strong liking of Caitlin Clark, and, you know, for good reason.
I mean, it's hard not to like her, too. I mean, in my opinion, she's one of the most exciting players to watch right now, and just the fact that my sister asked her when I was over there, I was like, oh, I'm like, Bailey, have you been to any Iowa women's game? And she laughed at me, and she's like, I can't get tickets to the women's game. She's like, it's so, like, it's cheap. It's way more cheaper to get tickets to the men's games than the women's games. She's like, I can't even get there. And it's crazy that they have, like, celebrities on courtside there and stuff like that. Like, she is an attraction. And, like, it's she's a fun player to watch. And so it would be entertaining to watch Iowa and Florida State showdown. But that's... That's about a little over, a little over 2 months away. So a lot of basketball left to be played.
Yeah, no, I think one important thing, you know, I think this is what the fans come here for our podcast for. Right now, in this bracketology for women's basketball, Ball State is a 13 seed playing in Spokane. And that's, I know that's what people come to our podcast for, is Ball State updates.
I mean, listen, they were playing, this. I was up today and I was sitting on the couch and they were playing the school day game at Central Michigan. And they beat the crap out of Central Michigan. Oh, God, what's her name? I can't think of her name right now. Becky...
Becky with the good hair?
It's not Becky with the good hair. No, it's up.
We make cultural references on here as well.
We're not ending this podcast till Allie Becky. Yeah, she threw down 32 points today against Central Michigan. Ball State looks really good, y'all. I wouldn't be surprised if they are able to at least
win it all.
No, you're just putting words in my mouth. I wouldn't be surprised if they were able to win out their first round game this year. It would probably be against, it was in Spokane, against Gonzaga. Yeah, it's against Gonzaga. They went down in rankings too? What the hell? But yeah, I don't know. They're playing really well too. There's a lot of great women's basketball this year. A lot of great, exciting teams. South Carolina put up a high school score against Kentucky. Indiana and Iowa had a great game.
Was it who knocked off LSU? Was it Auburn?
Oh, yeah. Auburn did, and that was a very gritty. Just Auburn played some great defense in that game.
Women's basketball is exciting right now.
Very exciting.
As we saw in the tournament last year, it's, you know, women's basketball is nothing to scoff at. It's as fun as watching men's basketball. There's a lot of talent. I think you get to be even more fun when, you know, you have a Tanaya Latson 100% healthy. He belongs in the, like we've talked about, in the upper echelon, like higher, like, you know, one of the best players in the country when it comes to that. Like, she's not the best player in the country, but she belongs in that conversation of, like, you know. But I'm excited for the country to get to know her better. I think they know tidbits about her. But once we get to the tournament, if they make a nice run, people are going to know who Tanaya Latson is. And she's probably get another car out of it as well.
Did she get a car before?
Oh, that's how
she got player of the.
No, she signed. There's allegedly there's teams looking to poach her from Florida State, and she got a nice NIL deal, and took a picture in a car.
Give her a car. Oh my god! Well, good for her.
Good for her. Good she for deserves her. It.
I would love a car. I would love to be good at sports and get a car too. But she's really good. She deserves it. Anyway. Oh,
yeah. Anyways,
as the temperature begins to warm, I know we're in Florida and we're saying as the temperature begins to warm up, the spring sports are starting and softball is getting kicked up. Just in a bit, the Garnet and Gold Games coming up on February 3rd, and then right after that, we're getting into the Joanne Graff Classic, and we're going to see the softball team back in action. A few months after, shouldn't say a few months, it's been a second, since they lost to Oklahoma in the Women's College World Series Championship. But, you know, this is a different team, still maintaining a lot of talent. Essen's going to be kind of getting out the story, just looking at the newcomers and what's so not and what's going on out at the softball field. Essen, are you talking a little bit about softball coming up?
Yeah, we got availability tomorrow with senior infielder Devin Flaherty, you know. Very talented player. Can't wait to talk to her and Lonnie tomorrow at 2 p.m. It's going to be interesting. I've not been out there. There's a bunch of construction going out there, so I'm finding parking. I have to go earlier than 2 p.m. If you don't know, I've never mentioned this on a podcast. Obviously, you wouldn't know. But, yeah, I do have a obsession making sure I get to a place early and getting a parking spot. But, you know, that's besides the point. I'm excited to see that. You know, FSU obviously lost a ton of talent from last year's team. Josie Muffley's gone, shortstop. You lose Catherine Sandercock, who was obviously one of the best players and one of the best pitchers in the country. But you have Hallie Whitecaser back, Jahani Kerr. FSU's like, you could load it faster. Katie Dax back, Makayla Edenfield, McKenna Reed, you know, who's was a stud freshman last year. I'm excited to see more of her. You have Maddie Bach, who could take a bigger role this year as a sophomore. Amaya Ross is back, you know, very key pinch role. We mentioned Devin Flaherty. Kaylee Harding is moving to first base next year, key returner. Kaylee Mudge is back, another great player. Allison Royalty. So there's a ton of returning talent. It's obviously, we're going to have to see what the pitching situation looks like, because that's what is going to really determine how far we've seen a team can go. They have, you know, Ashton Danley is a freshman they've added that is highly touted, a lot of potential. Mimi Gordon's another freshman that they have a lot of, you know, hope for. So obviously we're going to see with a less proven staff, we're going to see a team that's going to rely on what we saw last year. There's a lot of, you know, by committee pitching. Lonnie early last year compared herself to the Tampa Bay Rays, who use an opener, which if you guys don't know, you know, you have a starter for baseball, softball. They go, you know, usually go five, six, seven innings between, if you roughly, an opener goes 1-2 innings and kind of bridges the gap and you get to your next pitcher, starter or reliever, where they could go deeper into the game. So it's been interesting to see what that looks like. You know, I'm excited to see McKenna Reed, the kind of progress she makes this year. She was really good last year. You know, I talked to her father at the World Series. She made an appearance in the World Series, and like, you know, he was just, it's crazy. This year, pitching in the state championship in Oregon, OSA championship. They played at Oregon, at the Oregon Stadium. So in 1 year, she was going from pitching in a state championship in high school to throwing in the World Series, which is kind of just crazy. She got in that game and performed all right. You know, it was a great Oklahoma team, so kind of hard to do that. Catherine Sandercock, who was a great pitcher in her right, struggling a little bit against that Oklahoma team. So
That Oklahoma team is just, as annoying as they are built different, and they do deserve that number one ranking until someone is able to hand them a really bad, I wouldn't even say a bad loss, multiple losses, and then try to knock them off that national title run. I mean, that Oklahoma team is ridiculous. I don't remember the last time I've seen a... They're up there with, like, some of the most dominant college programs of all time, period, with, you know, UConn basketball, and I can't think of really anyone right now, but that Oklahoma team's very, very good. It's going to take a lot to knock that team off.
Yeah, one newcomer I want to talk about, and Jack can give more insight, you know, she was the 2022 Big Ben Player of the Year. And, I'm talking about already, right?
Yeah, Jasani.
Jasani Beachum, you know, this could be one of the newcomers. I'm not sure how much playing time she's going to get, but she might get playing time earlier in the season where, you know, Lonnie kind of, like, mix and matches and figure out what lineup. But tell me about Jasani. What's the fans know about her since, you know, you covered her?
Yeah, I mean, she transferred in from, if she's a player that just, you know, kind of, she won these high school accolades just about wherever she went. She was, she's originally in Dothan as a sophomore, which, if you guys don't know where Dothan is, it's about an hour and a half away from here in Alabama. And she, I think she was the Alabama, I think she was that area's player of the year as a sophomore. And she put up some ridiculous stats. And then she came here and played for Florida High, which is Florida State's charter school, on a very talented team as well, her sophomore year. And she put up some ridiculous stat lines that year. And she won her All Big Ben Player of the Year that year. Let me see if I can pull that up quick. 2022 softball.
Yeah, going back to it, while Jack looks it up, she was the earned offensive and Super 12 award in Alabama. She finished that season with 19 home runs, the third most in the state of Alabama per Max Preps, and she was also the Casey Cooper Home Run Derby champion, 80 home runs in the last round. So, you know, 3A Alabama All-State Player Hitter of the Year. So before she transferred here, so Jack will have more.
I mean, she put up her first year here, she put up some ridiculous stats. She had the highest batting average out of any of the players here. She was batting at .507. At 95 plate appearances and 69 at-bats, she had 39 runs on 35 hits, 36 RBIs, 10 doubles, 2 triples, and 12 home runs. That was her first year. And then the last year, she had already committed to FSU. That was the real reason why she ended up transferring over to Florida High from Dothan was to be a little bit closer to the staff, and it did pay off for Florida High as well, because it was a team that has a lot of talent. They were a handful of Division I commits that they just couldn't get it, kind of put it together in the postseason. Her senior year, she had a .394 average, 92 plate appearances, 71 at-bats, 35 runs, 28 hits, 23 RBIs, 4 doubles, 3 triples, and 9 home runs. As you can tell from this, her stat line, she is an absolute cannon of just an arm. She can hit the hell out of the ball. And she's a third baseman as well, and she's played great there too. She's a part of a very successful Florida High team. She's an anchor on that team as well, and she's a part of this 1-2 punch with Maddie Mayo, who was our 2023 Player of the Year, who is now at Florida Atlantic. There's just a strong team. She's a strong piece. Like Austin said, I don't know how much playing time we're going to see from her this year, but whatever playing time she is going to get, expect her to get some hits off of some of these teams as well, and hit the ball hard. She can really hit the ball, and that's, I think, one of the big reasons why Amlani brought her to Florida State. But no, it's always exciting, as you can relate to this too, it's always exciting when you're prep kids, you get to see them play at the next level. It's always a thrill.
No, I mean, and then, you know, just some, it's always fun. It's like Jack mentioned, you know, still keep up, well, I covered a lot of preps in Oregon, so I keep up with one of my kids that's, plays for Oregon State. He learned, you know, a scholarship. He was a walk-on earned a scholarship, so, you know, when he got that scholarship, I was able to, you know, message him, like, hey, I'm proud of you, and he was really happy that I sent him that, so. But, yeah, no, going back to Beecham, she got some impressive pedigree. Her uncle, Ernest Robinson, ran track at Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
Her cousin, Richard Pittman, played football at Rice. Her aunt, Shanita Pittman, played basketball at Pensacola College and Savannah State University. And her cousin, Elijah Jackson, played football at Weber University.
Mm-hmm.
So impressive background, impressive pedigree. Obviously very talented player. You know, excited to see her. Excited to see just some of the growth. You know, we saw Katie Dack had a strong first year. You know, infield had a good sophomore season. We get to see more of her this year. Just Devin Flaherty is another player, you know, who if she gets a chance to hit the ball when it's not 50 feet outside, called a strike.
In Oklahoma City, while they're playing Oklahoma, but,
you know, that's besides the point.
Yeah.
Johnny Kerr and Hallie Waycaser were two players who got healthier last year, made big differences, like, you know, as they imagined. Kaylee Mudge is just a demon on the base paths, you know. Hard to catch, hard to, you know, so.
Demon on the baseball.
Base pads.
On the base.
Base pads. Base pads. Yeah.
Okay.
We'll see if Allison Royalty takes the next step. She's, you know, immensely talented transfer.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's going to come down to how much they can pitch and do. You know, Ashton Danley is a player that they have a lot of excitement for. So it's a very talented team. It's sweet. Can they put it together? Danley was the Tennessee Gatorade Softball Player of the Year in 2022, and was number two player in extra innings, Elite 100. She had, you know, .36 ERA and hit .682.
Mm-hmm.
So in her senior season, so pretty talented,
So.
But yeah, I mean, softball's coming up, and we'd be remiss not to say baseball's coming up as well. You know,
that is true.
It's down the line. It's not as close as softball. I think the season opens with a 3-game series against Butler on February 16th. So, like, what's that, a month from yesterday? So we're not that far
16th,
away.
Yeah.
We're not that far away from baseball either. 30 days, 2 hours, 2 minutes, and 14 seconds, according to the countdown at SevenRules.com, if you want to be exact.
Oh, my God, that's specific.
That's very specific, but that's what you come to Null Sports Podcast for, you know, specificity. I can speak.
No, that's one of those words where it's like, what's the... I don't know what the grammatical term is for it right now, but I get what you're saying.
Yes. Jack, where can they find us? We'll wrap the things up for this episode.
Yeah, you can find all of our stuff at Null Sports, at nullsports.com, Null Sports on Facebook, Null Sports on Twitter, TLH Null Sports on Instagram. My personal handle is Jack G. Williams, SN_Kasim on Twitter/X. You can find us on YouTube at Null Sports as well.
subscribe to us there, you know, subscribe to the Democrat, follow our podcast. You know, if you want to continue to see our faces, hear our voices, read our words, just click the follow and subscribe button. But that's gonna do it for today. Thank you guys for joining us once again for another episode of the Noel Sports Podcast.